I'm here in a noisy cafe called The Coffee Stop with Julian Caddy. This is Brighton Fringe's home here, Pelham Tower.
Pelham Towers. Fringe Towers.
Yeah. Julian, you're not very corporate, are you?
I'm not very corporate.
Yeah, I mean, this fringe, the reason I love it is all fringes have to have business plans these days and go for funding, but you're not sitting here in a suit with, you know, a marketing manager and a PR person telling you what to say.
No. I think that, I mean, to my mind anyway, I think it's quite important to remember where you come from. I've been doing fringe, whether it be as a performer, a director, a producer, as a toilet paper changer, bin emptier, for 23 years now. And wherever you sit in the fringe hierarchy, if that's what you could call it, ultimately we're all there for the same reason. Brighton Fringe Limited exists to serve a sector. We managed to survive in servicing that sector by raising funds however we're able to raise them, be that through registrations, advertising, sponsorship, funding, and generous donations. And the ultimately you can go down the road of being corporate in the way that you work, but you can lose friends along the way and lose the reason why you do things in the first place. It's easy for that to happen, though. I think there are growing pains, and nothing's ever perfect. We find ourselves in a position where we lose a corporate sponsor, but hopefully there'll be others along the way that can service us. We work in an environment which is not corporate, but we work with a lot of people that are corporate. So we have to somehow reconcile ourselves with that, in that the brass tacks of what we do is we service a sector, but also we have audiences, some of whom are used to a very slick operation for ticketing, for example, which is a really important part of what we do. So we need to have a website that works, and that costs money. And people expect to find a basket, a card, you know, being able to buy things with your card or being able to log in. So all of that sort of thing is the corporate side of what we do, if you could call it corporate, but I guess it's the functional side.
So there's those necessities now to run a big fringe. But equally, you know, added to that list of jobs, you've run your own venue in Edinburgh, and that's not always been easy, but there's a bunch of skills you get by doing that. You're running a workshop in the fringe about performing, and if people Google you, they might be surprised at some of the photos that come up of you as a professional performer, as an actor. Mm. Having been in film, they can find a showreel for you on YouTube. There's a bunch of skills there that aren't the corporate skills. That are you drawing on them right now at this fringe?
I guess so. I think in the end, in order to be able to relate to people effectively in the job that I do, I think I need to properly understand what it is. I think it's not the same as another festival environment. A fringe does need you do need to understand the ins and outs of all the things that everyone does. So if I go and meet people that, you know, who are running the Warren or the Spiegel Tent or the Marlborough or some of the smaller venues, I hopefully can, from my experience, relate to them and them to be able to relate to me in that way. I think it's easy to go down the road of thinking, oh, we're a great big festival, therefore we must behave in this way, and we must be behave a little bit like the council or the government. And that if you start to do that, you lose touch, I think.
Yeah, and also the fringes all start to look like each other because they sort of benchmark against each other. And there's a danger then that as you grow, there's a model on the street that everyone's supposed to follow. And yet part of the at least the promise made by Brighton Fringe, is it's not following everyone else, is it?
No, I mean, I think a lot of people are following us, which is nice to hear. But in the end, there are so many fringe festivals these days, and in the end, also, most of those fringe festivals do look to Edinburgh, at what Edinburgh's achieved as a festival. And I don't mean the Edinburgh Festival Fringe Society, I mean Edinburgh Fringe as a whole, because that needs to be noted that the fringe isn't the fringe society. The fringe is the composite parts that make it up, and that's the same with Brighton Fringe as well. I'm the managing director of Brighton Fringe, the charity which underpins or oversees or glues it together, however you want to see it. But in the end, you are very much responsible for something that takes place in and therefore is reflective of the town, the city, the village, the place in which this fringe takes place. And that should be the thing that dictates us more than the looking over our shoulder. We can find out how other fringes have laid out their brochure, or other fringes have run their box office, or other fringes have dealt with technology or worked in social media, or mistakes people have made, so that you can learn from their mistakes. But ultimately, the actual essence of what makes Brighton Fringe, Buxton Fringe, Oxford Fringe, you know, all the fringes, individual, and vital to their individuality, is the fact that they reflect the place in which they originate from.
Now, I accept that, and I wouldn't ask you to comment on any particular venues or fringes, but you talk about the composite parts, and, you know, that's important. But when we hear, say, in the news today about what's happening over at Perth Fringe, about Fringe World, which is essentially that, you know, a lot of artists are potentially out of pocket because one of the companies that represents half of the shows in the Fringe has folded and may not be able to pay its creditors. I don't ask you to comment on that. We don't even know what all the facts are. But when we come towards Brighton Fringe, and I love the Fringe, you know, I put a lot of years into this, and I worry, but not because I'm criticising these venues, that if our Fringe starts to evolve into less and less bigger venues, if, you know, I could ask you the question, what would happen if on your watch in 5 or 10 years' time there were only three venues and they'd gobbled up the whole Fringe? You know, is that something that would worry you, that there does seem to be across all those fringes, even as they fight for their individuality? It's probably the nature of competition that you end up with winners and losers, and some of the smaller venues in Brighton just can't make it work, because if they try and open a bar or a cafe, they don't have that spending power, that purchasing power of those people. So you end up with hubs that everyone sort of moves to, and then on the fringes, the real fringes of the fringe, you just get a lot of struggling venues or single venues that just can't get the audiences. Now, I'm not saying that's happening in Brighton because of the bigger venues. They are what they are, and, you know, I'm looking forward to launches and going to see what's on in those hubs, and they're very vibrant. But is there a danger in Brighton that, you know, if you look at, say, what happens in another fringe, if one of those big venues folded and hundreds of shows are out of pocket, that must concern you if that's starting to happen?
I find it deeply troubling that sort of thing happens. And again, looking to Edinburgh, it used to be a running thing. Which venue is going to fold this year? Which group of performers are going to be out of pocket? And we'll all remember some of the venues that will have come and gone over the past 15, 20 years in Edinburgh. It is a bit like the Wild West in a fringe festival. It's not perfect. It's very difficult to govern because we have no contracts with the venues themselves. In the true spirit of an open access arts festival, that comes with advantages, but also many, many disadvantages. And governance is one of them. If I could, I would be wanting to try to put in some kind of obligation, financial, to make sure that venues are working within certain financial realms of responsibility, or having guarantees or having insurance in place at least. But we don't have that ability as the festival organisers, as things are at the moment. We do look at it. We have a code of practice, which we asked all venues to agree to, and one of those does involve them stating that they are acting within their means to be able to behave in a responsible manner in terms of the company's money. But we also have to just keep our eyes and ears open. If there is a feeling that there are financial difficulties there within a venue, then we need to be mindful of that.
So how do we make sure that Fringe is alive from one side of the BN postcode to the other, and not just kind of accidentally perhaps dominating just on the Old Steen and up towards St Peter's Church?
That's where we can come in. I'm now working with the council at the moment on a part of the cultural strategy for the city, which is all in a very early stage. But we're wanting to work initially with two parts, so Hangleton and East Brighton as two starting points, to work with the local community there with a view to them doing some more fringe activity. There already is, but they're not necessarily doing it in the fringe, because it's something that might not necessarily be something that people will have thought about doing. It might not be something that they think applies to them. They think it is just to do with going down to the centre of the city for the fringe, but they don't necessarily notice that it is something that could be anywhere. So that's just a start. It does come down to funding, though. We are a very small organisation that requires funding to be able to do these sorts of things. We manage to do what we currently do, and that's similar to most small to medium arts organisations. You're just going from pillar to post, really.
But when you talk then about funding, and you talk about talking to the council and a mission to get the smaller venues involved, I'm glad, because that doesn't sound like corporate speak to me. And you're somebody like me in my life that's been up at 1 a.m. and press send, put your foot in your mouth and regret it and learned afterwards. And yet, going back to my first question, even though that can happen and you can end up with sleepless nights, I'm kind of glad. Isn't it important that, we're not sitting here with someone editing what you say, that if Brighton Fringe is to be this creative place, yes, there are corporate things we have to do and we have to behave responsibly and, save costs on box office and be smart. But the heart of Brighton Fringe as an organisation, that's the, even if some of the other places are operating on profit and loss and marketing and as the posters go up at the Warren, Brighton Fringe mustn't be too corporate, because then it can't serve the artistic community as well as it could if it wasn't corporate.
Yeah. In the end, Brighton Fringe Limited can't make a loss. We're not a profit-making organisation. We're a not-for-profit. So if there is a profit that's made, it gets invested into the following year.
Yeah. So it's a social business, though.
Yeah, it's a social business. But we can't make a loss. If we do make a loss, then we have to make very difficult decisions with regard to reducing the size of the organisation. So in that sense, we have to be corporate in that sense.
But not in the sense of seeking profit maximisation, and shareholders who are just in there for the money. Yes, you do have to. Like a charity, a good charity has to at least cover its costs or make a surplus so it can invest. That's still not the spirit of corporate, I guess, I'm talking about.
Exactly. No, we are an arts organisation. We are very conscious of the fact that most of the people taking part, the organisations taking part in Brighton Fringe, are doing so without funding, with their own money, possibly with borrowings, money given to them by friends and family. And so that makes for a very different environment to one where you've got lots of funded arts in, say, Brighton Festival, for example, which is a whole different side of the coin, in that you're investing in shows or making or curating shows as a funded organisation for other funded organisations in many cases. So it's a cabal of funded organisations all coming together and creating this event, which is also brilliant. That has to be said. I mean, and so it should be, quite frankly. It should be the creme de la creme of everything that you'd expect that to be. But the fringe is a different beast. It's something that has to be quite fresh, and yeah, things aren't quite ready here. The fringe is never quite ready. It's always a bit of a miracle that we manage to make it happen. It shouldn't exist,
but it does. So as somebody who has been in this role for a few years now, and with, I think the stress is that you have to have a corporate role, and you are an arts maker, and you are a festival creator, with all of those issues, and you're a human being too, with family. If you look back since you joined this mad fringe, and you look ahead now with hopefully the sky clearing for a clear night for the fireworks, which apparently is forecast, what main things are you feeling satisfied about, and what things are you feeling restless about?
Well, I'm satisfied about the progress that we're making generally. That is to say, with regard to improving quality, the awards, the bursaries, the seasons of work from Finland, from the Netherlands, from Flanders, a new show from Lithuania. Those are, again, part of a journey that we're taking in terms of trying to promote and encourage countries, companies, local and far away, to see Brighton Fringe as the platform that they want to be part of.
And that promotion still has never sacrificed the basic, the fundamental, which is that anyone can bring something to the Fringe.
Exactly. And ultimately, the people that have won awards at Brighton Fringe, who are coming back to Brighton Fringe as award winners, yay, they came through the same process as everybody else. Everybody can become an award winner. They need to just do the show that wins the award. And be an award-winning company that comes back with a new piece. That's all part of the same journey that people are on.
And then looking ahead, there's a month and a bit to come, and then there are perhaps years to come. What are you restless about?
It's finance. It is finance. It's knowing that just being able to know that next year we're going to be okay. Already, I'm worried about the next 6 months. Let alone the next few years, about whether or not we're going to be able to operate in the same way that we've managed to over the last few years. We're losing our office, so we're frantically looking for somewhere to move to at the moment. Rent is now something that is being added into what we're going to have to budget for, which is not something we've had to do. We're very fortunate. We've managed to be in spaces with people who've been supporting us in kind in that way. Funding is very much more difficult to come by. Sponsorship is very hard to come by. So finance is a very real concern for us right now.
And just in terms of maybe encouraging a bit of restlessness, that as the main venues at this fringe do partly mirror Spiegel tents elsewhere and large venue hubs, it does concern me that the only viable future seems to be, a bit like when the seafront was renovated with a lot of money, seems to be fueled by alcohol. And whether, can you imagine a fringe getting bigger that doesn't have as its basis bars everywhere?
Well, every fringe, I'd say, including Edinburgh, does have hubs that aren't like that. You go to, say, suite venues, it's a different vibe, it's a different spirit to the to the Bristow Square or the George Square venues. There, I hope, will always be that juxtaposition available within the fringe. You can still be a professional venue with a different business model. There are, it is the probably the hardest of hardcore coal faces of the arts, a fringe festival, where you're trying to play like big organisations, but you don't get the funding for it. It's very easy to be a wonderful venue space with a little bar which people go to at the interval, and then people leave, with a great big concert hall. But you can't do that without an enormous amount of funding. So there will still be these bars. It is the devil that sits on your shoulder, I think, and I don't think it sits completely comfortably. And I remember talking to a good friend of mine who ran a Spiegel tent in Edinburgh, and he was lamenting this. He's a pianist. He has a great show. He had a great show at the Fringe, and he was just fed up with the bar. It was dragging him down. It made him unhappy to have this, and ultimately it is the show that makes the bar. And I think you need to always remember that on the financial reports you'll see the bar makes lots and lots of money, but the reason why people go to that bar is because of the fact that it is part of an organisation that does shows. People will go for a drink, but they like to take in the vibe. If it had just been a bar sitting in the middle of the square, people wouldn't go. It's the vibe that comes with it.
And then finally, for people that don't know, the curtain comes down in the first week of June, the pop-up venues pack up, everyone goes back to Brighton year-round. And in your role then, so you've kind of hinted there's going to be a lot of trying to gather in some resources and funding. What else happens in your role between now and the next Fringe?
A lot of business planning, funding applications. We are doing a lot more training. We'll be doing a lot of the preparations for what I've alluded to in East Brighton and Hangleton to build up that side of things. There are other festivals that we need to go to have presence at, including Edinburgh.
And that's to encourage shows outside of the city to come to Brighton Fringe and bring their work.
Exactly. And also for Brighton to know that Brighton Fringe is standing up for their cause. I think it's really important for us to be seen not just within this, not just out in Edinburgh, but also within the city, to be out there. I get teased for going to international festivals. It's great fun, but it is really important in this really, 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 really busy environment to make sure that you're seen up there with the big boys. We're managing to play in an environment where you're in the same space as Edinburgh or Adelaide or Perth or the National Arts Festival of South Africa. All festivals which have big, big budgets, much, much bigger than we could ever dream of right now. But we're sitting at the same table, and that's really important.
Julian Caddy, thanks very much for talking to Fringe Review.